This is the Leapcast, where we talk about how today's current events impact your real life. If you are tired of politics, or you are just exhausted from the spin, this show is for you. My name is Andrew Lieb, and every week I host a talk radio show breaking down the news from an independent point of view. We discuss real estate, business, and your health, hear from the experts, and learn the truth on the Leapcast.
Personal coach and trusted attorney, Andrew Lieb.
Lauren, we have some stuff going on that is giving me the agitas. No, seriously.
The agitas.
It's true. The Biden administration, they got this American Families Plan, $1.8 trillion they need to pay for this thing they're saying right now. Now, it hasn't happened yet, and McConnell has come out saying he's just going to stop everything that Biden's trying to do. So maybe it will never happen. But there's a proposal in there that's given me the agita. And you know, the Leapcast is all about my therapy. I have a mic, so I'll just say what's on. Seriously.
How does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel very sad because one of the things they're doing in this thing, Biden is potentially proposing, is about what's called the 1031 exchange. And I'm going to just tell you what that means real quick, but I got an expert on who's going to make it make more sense in a second. But I just want, because, so right now what happens is if you have income producing property, this isn't about your primary residence. We're not talking about your primary residence. There's a thing, for primary residences that this has capital gains tax difference. This is income producing property. So you got a rental property, residential, commercial, could be industrial, doesn't matter. And so what happens is you buy property. And what's your goal when you buy property?
Make money.
Yeah, not just money on the rent. You want it to be worth more when you sell it, right?
Well, the American dream is that you buy property, it appreciates over time, and then when you want to sell it, you make a lot of money.
So what the problem is there's this thing called capital gains tax when you sell. Now, just to be clear, capital gains tax is traditionally lower than income tax because you're doing something as you're holding an investment as opposed to making money on, like, say, rent on an ongoing business. So historically, there was this thing called a 1031 exchange, which has all sorts of technical stuff that I need an expert to tell us more about on the show. And you know, I'm a practicing attorney, but I still need to go to the man from the qualified intermediary, Mike Brady. That's who I talk to every time when I have a question from Madison Exchange, because I've known Mike since we were both involved in the Bar Association. And we both gave CLEs, continuing legal education. And I would listen to him speak and I go, this guy knows what he's talking about. And so when you know when someone knows more than you, you go to that person. So anyway, before we bring Mike on, I just want to tell you.
Okay.
There used to be this thing. Well, there is this thing now where I can call up Mike and his company. I could say, listen, Mike, I made $1 million on this property from when I bought it to when I sold it. So I bought it for $1 million. Now it's worth $2 million just for ease of use. And I can say, Mike, I don't want to pay capital gains tax now because then when I buy the next property, I'm not going to have that full $2 million. I'll have a reduced number. And so what Mike can do now is help me defer the capital gains tax and roll over a small property into bigger properties. Think about it like this. Mike helps me play Monopoly. I go from buying a house to selling my four houses and buying one hotel in a consolidation without having to pay capital gains tax along the way.
Yeah, and just to simplify that a little bit, that amount of tax is a very significant amount, and it almost makes you not want to reinvest it if you have to pay all those taxes and not defer them, because then what you're going through, I call them the friction costs, you're going through all of that to then, what are you really getting ahead in your real estate?
Well, you're getting behind, Lauren, because if you don't defer them and you just keep your little houses instead of consolidating them, you get your rent based on the valuation of the property in a loose way. It's a loose way, but as you have more expensive property, there's more expensive rent. So if I don't sell, there's no capital event that causes me to owe capital gains tax. So my rental income's better from not selling. But if I do sell, And there is no capital gains tax because of this deferral from calling someone like Madison Exchange, a 1031 exchange qualified intermediary, and calling Mike Brady. And I can consolidate. What I can do is I can lower my costs. Why? Because instead of administering four properties together like a monopoly, I'm doing one, which reduces my costs. You know, when you have one roof instead of four roofs, it becomes cheaper. What you're trying to do is as you get bigger, instead of having lots of little pieces, having less big pieces. So we're at this bind right now because I read this and I immediately emailed Mike, and I emailed him something and he actually wrote back like three lines. Here's what it actually is, because originally I didn't even know. And because I read in the newspaper, I read, you know, I'm a Google News, I'm an addict. And I read that Biden's going to get rid of the 1031 exchange. So Mike, before we go anywhere, we got Mike Brady on the line with Lauren Lieb, Andrew Lieb on the Liebcast. Just tell us what it is that's going on, because I am having therapy every day right now, because I always wanted to have a hotel on Boardwalk and Park Place and win the game.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Andrew and Lauren. It's a concern. And let me just start off with saying that, you know, some of the things that are in the two packages Biden's talking about, which is, I think, the American Family Plan and the American Jobs Plan, you know, he's got a lot of good goals in this legislation. And really, I guess the concern is how they're going to pay for it. And some of the issues that come up, specifically when you talk about that friction between the Republicans and the Democrats, the problem we have there is that a lot of this stuff that maybe you would typically put in legislation and figure you could negotiate around it or give it up in negotiation, it doesn't look like either party is going to be negotiating on these bills, and they may go through as is. So that's the concern. And so what we're looking at, first of all, is that they want to raise income taxes on people who make over $1 million. It may be for a married couple filing jointly, that might be $2 million. We're not really sure. It's not really clear. Part of that also is that they would raise the capital gain tax rate, which is currently for, you know, people in that ballpark, about 23.8% for federal taxes, to something closer to 43.4% for higher income earners. So it's almost double, you know, where it used to be. That actually puts it a little bit more in line with what income taxes would be. And so you would kind of remove the preference for having capital gain rather than income tax. Additionally, this is a little bit technical. I won't dive into it, but they're talking about eliminating the step up in basis when you sell an appreciated asset like real property. So
I would love for you to just give me a quick review of that.
Yeah, we're going to go through all of those. So let's start with that step up in basis, because I think that a lot of people don't realize this. I have a buddy, actually. It's interesting that you bring this up, Mike. And Mike and I are in the Smithtown area. And I have a buddy that calls me up and he goes to me. He knows this guy in his 80s who's trying to unload a building in Smithtown, and he wants to liquidate his assets because he's got a terminal situation. He wants to die soon. Well, he doesn't want to. He's going to die soon. He's very against it, actually. But he's going to die soon, and there's a great deal on this property. My buddy calls me up and tells me, he's all excited. I told you about this, Lauren. Mm-hmm. I showed you it. And I said to him, I've never heard of someone who's going to die selling real estate before they die, because the whole thing is that you want to hold it for the step up in basis. What is the step up in basis?
Yeah, so typically capital gain is calculated based on, you know, in loose terms, you know, the price that you paid for the property when you bought it plus the cost of improvements, and you would then subtract that from the actual sales price to a third party. And that difference is what's subject to capital gains tax, the profit, right? If you die owning real property or really any other appreciated asset, your estate gets what's called a step up in basis to the value of that property at the date of death. So if you bought a property for $200,000 and at the time of your death, it's worth $1 million. Well, then for capital gains tax purposes, your estate inherits it at $1 million basis. If they sold it the next day for $1 million, there's no capital gains tax due.
But
so that's,
Mike,
a really powerful tool.
Mike, if they sold it the day before they died, to my point, they would be paying capital gains tax on that $800,000. And you said that capital gains tax now is about 23.8% federally, setting aside the whole New York thing. But we're saying that's a tremendous amount of money. So if someone says to you, hey, and this is, I want to make sure you agree with me. If someone says, I have a terminal situation. I want to liquidate all of my real estate so it's easier for my kids. As a tax professional, someone who works in real estate taxes and capital gains as a qualified intermediary, you'd say that's the craziest thing you ever heard, right?
It's a bad idea for sure. You know, and that's, you know, and that's actually a place where 1031 comes into play, because maybe they can make their life easier by exchanging into, you know, assets that are easier to divide. You know, they could buy, you know, something called Delaware Statutory Trust, for instance, which would allow them to buy several properties that they could then, you know, leave to their kids in their will and get that step up in basis and have the capital gain disappear. So yeah, absolutely. You don't want to do something like that when death is imminent. You know, we do something in 1031 exchanges. We call it swapping until you drop. You keep doing exchanges during the course of your lifetime. And then when you die, that capital gain disappears, at least under current tax law. So that's what they're talking about doing away with. So now, you know, if you inherited property and then sold it, your gain would be calculated based on what the person you inherited it from purchased the property.
And Mike, just to clarify, under current law, forgetting Biden's plan, forgetting what happens with the negotiation for a second, we're not talking about estate tax, to be clear, right? So if I inherit property from someone subject to exemptions, because there's federal exemptions and state exemptions up to a certain cap where you don't have to pay estate tax, you would still have estate tax on that step up in basis. That's correct. That's just dealing with the capital gains. Am I understanding that?
Yeah, possibly. You know, so you could possibly have an estate tax too. But right now, under current law, those thresholds for people that actually pay estate taxes, I think it's like 0.005% of the population. I'm making the number up, but it's some, you know, minuscule decimal point of the population that pays estate taxes, because the estate tax thresholds are so high.
It's like almost $11 million federally. But so but back to my point, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. On death, right now, capital gains tax is one issue where we talk about step up and basis, and estate tax is another issue. So let's presume they get rid of the step up and basis, and let's presume also that they get rid of some of this exemption on estate tax, which is some of the other proposals we're hearing. You could be getting hit with a double whammy when inheriting property. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, essentially that's correct. At least that's what it looks like. I'm not sure how it'll come out in the wash, but yeah, right now that's the way it looks.
My jaw's kind of dropped.
Yeah, you should see her. So Mike's not in the studio right now because of this COVID thing. And it's like the entire time we're talking right now, Lauren's going with the estate plan I tell our parents all the time. They always ask me, my parents, Lauren's parents, they say, what should we do in estates? And as you know, as an attorney, that's such an awkward conversation, particularly when you have siblings. You're like, go speak to someone else. But what I always say is, please go spend the money so we don't have the problem. And the truth of the matter is, Lauren, if they're going to get rid of the step up in basis and they're going to lower the estate tax exemption to a point where it's not the 0.000% of the population that's paying it, a significant portion pays it, my advice is going to be right. Like, you might as well spend it before you die. And that's going to be a catastrophic event on economy. And people, I know so many people that are relying on their inheritance for their own retirement.
I know people who never actually tried in life because they always had this end game plan that they were just going to inherit money.
And it's weird to say, woe is me, for someone who's a quasi trust fund baby. Like, that's not what we're saying. They're not trust fund babies in that way. But in Long Island, the average person in Long Island has a pretty expensive house. Like, just to be in New Long Island is an expensive type of thing. And it's not small change, assuming that they don't have a mortgage. And lots of people paid off their mortgage. They were the people that had the government job, the teacher job, the nurse job, and they paid off their mortgage over the course of the last 30, 40 years, whatever it is. And they had this nest egg and they want to give it to their kids.
Yeah, I think anybody listening to this show at this point, if you didn't have that, you probably tuned us out because you're just thinking, oh, this is just rich technical.
Well, I want to go back talking about technical, Lauren, because Mike used two terms. So I want to make sure I get this right again, too. You said capital gains and income tax, and I tried to explain it before. Can you give us a better way to understand the difference? I'm thinking about Mom right now because Mom listens to the show. And then, unfortunately, Mike, I don't know if you have this experience, I then have to spend 4 hours with Mom with her 25 questions about on my show. So I'm hoping that you can help me explain the difference between capital gains and income tax as it applies to real estate.
Yeah, so first of all, the income tax rate is typically applied to people with jobs, right? So you get your, you know, your W-2 income, it comes in, and you're going to, and it could also be 1099 income. I don't want to, you know, speak wrong on that, but really anything that's generated by your effort, okay, typically is taxed as income. Additionally, short-term hold investments. If you own an investment, whether it's real estate or stocks, and you own it for under a year, you will pay income taxes if you sell it in under a year. There's a rate called the long-term capital gain rate that kicks in once you own the property a year and a day. Okay, and that is a preferential rate on the profits that you get from selling an asset. It's called capital gain. And those rates, as we mentioned, are significantly lower. As I said, the federal long-term rate is currently between, there's a 0% rate for some people out there, but that's very low income. But most people are paying between 15% and 23.8% total federal capital gain. Plus, on top of that, depending where you live, you will also pay state income taxes on that capital gain.
This is for owning a property for 1 year and one day?
Or more.
Correct.
Or more. And then if you are a flipper.
But more importantly, with a flipper, now the flipper could talk to Mike if they wait a year and a day, and they could use a 1031 and keep deferring, as Mike said, flip until you drop.
Sure.
And yeah. Tell us, Mike.
Correct you on that just a little bit. You really don't want to. Basically, the property has to be held with the intention to hold it for investment rather than resale. So your flipper, technically, even if they own it a year and a day, they could be viewed as what's called a dealer in real property, and they may not be entitled to the preferential rate.
Interesting.
Additionally, they probably should not do a 1031 exchange because, again, they're not holding it for investment. They're holding it for resale. But that's a kind of a technical.
That's an important technical, though. So what you're saying is that it's not just the strict year and a day rule. There's an intent involved, and what you're doing for your profession is kind of going to influence things, particularly if you get audited by the IRS.
Correct. Yeah, you just and that's why it's always important to talk to your accountant, which I cannot stress enough.
It's amazing how many people come to my law firm. We do a lot of closings, and they ask us questions. And in the retainer, it says, and any lawyer that doesn't do this should be shot. It says in the retainer, I am not giving tax advice. You need to go speak to your accountant. And I couldn't agree with you more about with what you're saying there, Mike. Let's go back, though, to what's going on under this plan so we can understand the difference. So let's assume, for argument's sake, the Democrats just do what they're going to do. You said, and you acknowledged it, that the odds right now, the way Congress is made up, there's not much negotiation. Historically, one would say, I'll give you this if you give me this. I'll give you this if you give me this. Right now, it's like a steamroll or a run into a wall. So let's assume that the Democrats can steamroll this through. What are we looking at under the current proposal?
Yeah, so first of all, I am a little bit hopeful that they will not be able to steamroll it through because I don't think that they have unanimity in the Democratic Party over this, you know. So they're going to pass this. They're going to try to pass it under what's called reconciliation, which means the filibuster does not apply. So it would be a simple majority. But in the Senate, they're at 50-50 when you have the independents that caucus with the Democrats. They're about 50, likewise with the Republicans. And so it would come down to Vice President Kamala Harris, who would cast the deciding vote. But it appears to me that people like Joe Manchin and Chris Sinema probably
he said no.
are not.
He said no. He said it's not happening. Yeah. Manchin said he's not doing reconciliation on this, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what he's indicated. Who knows where that'll wind up. But I also think there's enough other Democrats that are kind of pro-business or, you know, have business interests in mind, including, quite frankly, you know, our very own Senator Chuck Schumer, who many people think is this liberal firebrand, but really has an eye and ear open for business and recognizes, I think, in many cases that real estate is an important segment of our economy and something that he does not necessarily want to hurt.
So Mike, am I hearing you say before you even go into this proposal that me, the person calling my therapist, the person that's freaking out about this 1031 exchange thing, I should take a breath for a second? It's not all going to go down up in smoke.
Yeah, I think we have a little ways to go. I mean, listen, we're concerned, certainly, you know, in the real estate industry. I mean, every other phone call I have is, what are we going to do when they eliminate 1031 exchanges, which is kind of funny because that's not even the proposal. But I think we should take a breath, and I think we should also be constructive in what we're doing. You know, there are ways that we can kind of influence the decision. I'm going to give a website out that people can look at, and you can actually, we have a tool that you can actually contact your congresspeople to tell them that you're opposed to this. And it's 1031taxreform.com. And if you go on that site, there's a place that you can link to actually go to your, basically it lets you send an email to your congressional representatives and tell them that you're opposed to this.
And when I go to 1031taxexchange.com, and I go check this out, I'm going to read, I think that you just told me this, that there is no proposal to fully get rid of the 1031 exchange. Did I hear you correctly?
Correct. That's 1031taxreform.com. And so they're not talking about eliminating 1031 exchange. What they are talking about doing, however, which in many cases would be fundamentally the same, is they want to limit the ability to defer taxes under 1031 to $500,000 of gain.
I want to talk about that, but I think I butchered your website. Lauren's like giving me little notes here. Can you say the website one more time just so we don't butcher it?
Yeah, sure. It's 1031taxreform.com.
Perfect. So now you're saying they're limiting it to $500,000 a game. Are we talking about gain over lifetime, gain at one transaction? What does that mean?
I believe it's per year. I have not read anything that was particularly clear, but I believe it's per year, but I cannot tell from what I've read is whether it would be per transaction. But I would assume, you know, the rationale why they would do this would be because they're looking at higher income earners generally. I think they're going to limit it to $500,000 per year. You know, why would you let somebody do 20 transactions worth $500,000? You know, I could see all ways to getting around this by selling tick interest.
I'm wondering.
So if I bought a property 10 years ago for $1 million and I sold it for 1.5.
You still could do a 1031, I think.
In that scenario.
Is that correct, Mike?
You would be able to do a full 1031 on your $500,000 gain. I also don't know what happens if you have $1 million of gain. I believe you would still be able to defer $500,000. But again, it's not very clear just yet.
Just interesting. Is it possible, not for the high people that own the buildings in the city, but people, as Lauren just said in that example, is it possible in the $1 to $10 million building range that this might actually increase sales of property because then people would want to take advantage of this every year before it jumps over the $500,000? Could this be an uptick in the real estate market because of it?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I guess that's possible. Most of our clients, as we mentioned, are not talking to their accountants, despite our advice to the contrary. So I don't know how many people will be that forward thinking. But sure, a savvy investor could, you know, conduct their business that way and make sure they're always getting out before they exceed that threshold.
That's a little disappointing to hear that people that are using 1031s are not savvy investors.
Many are. Many are, but there are plenty of them that discover religion at the closing table when somebody says, are you doing a 1031 exchange on this? And they say, what's that?
Mike, you'll appreciate this. We signed a contract for a client that we gave tons of advice to. He had to sign an informed consent letter on something he was doing. We signed a contract the day after he calls up and says, what's my risk of going forward? And we're like, you already signed the contract. You signed an informed consent letter. Like, why are you asking today? Why didn't we talk about this yesterday? So at least in your scenario, they find it at the closing table. I have these people that find it a week later when they wake up with a nightmare. So I have to tell you, though, I've learned so many important things today, and I want to just regroup them and make sure that I'm on the same page. I learned that, first of all, that we don't know if this is going to happen. I think that's really, really, really important. I learned that there's still negotiations possible, but without getting Joe Manchin and some other like people, reconciliation is the only way to do it, and reconciliation doesn't have the votes without Manchin and some other Democrats. I learned that the step-up in basis is possibly going to get eliminated, which is a real risk, which is going to change the industry completely. That's the big risk because 1031 exchange is not being proposed to get rid of. It's just being proposed to be capped at $500,000. And as Mike pointed out, and Mike, you correct me if I'm wrong, we don't even know if that $500,000 is a lifetime, a year, or a transaction yet. So I think the key is, and how I'd like to end this segment, is you'll give us that information on that website one more time, because real estate investors need to understand how we can flip until we drop. What's the website? One more time, Mike Brady from Madison Exchange.
Sure, it's 1031, and that's the numbers, 1031, taxreform.com. And Andrew, if I could just say one other thing is that the one thing is, people just see this as, a bunch of people trying to get around paying taxes. But the implications of, limiting 1031 exchange go far beyond that, because if people have to pay, especially higher rates on their capital gain, it could lead to a freezing of the real estate market where people just decide they'd rather not sell. As you said before, their property's making money. Why are they going to mess with that and take half their profit off the table if you include state income taxes?
Mike, I just have to say that is why my jaw was dropped before. It wasn't about how this relates to me at all. It's about how it relates to the whole entire industry.
The market could crumble.
Yeah, and totally crumble.
But I think the key is, Mike, going back to that $500,000, first of all, if it was a little higher, that could be better. And number two, what does it mean? Is it per transaction, as we talked about before? And I think that a lot of times people are very black and white. I want it. I don't want it. And the devil's always in the details. And I think that keeping that step up in basis is really important, because that's going to change a lot of people's planning and everything else. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring Mike Brady back on when we know more, because we just don't know enough. And the real message for today is, number one, nothing's happened yet. Number two, you have to be your own advocate if you want to help our real estate economy. This is the Leapcast. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.
Find us on social media at Listen to Leap or visit listentoleap.com.